Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Avodah Zarah Daf Yud. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, we were discussing the issue of dating events, dating documents. We also made reference to the fact that in the sugya that we are dealing with, standard documents were dated from the point that the Greeks ascended to power. Hence, by the time the Churban Bayis Sheni came around, the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Greeks were in power 380 years. So that if you see a document dated year 400, you would know that that's 20 years after the Churban. Another point that we want to mention by way of introduction to the upcoming Gemara is there is a concept of a post-dated shtar, a shtar meuchar. Example, Reuven loans money to Shimon on year one. However, he writes that the loan took place year five. What that means is that Reuven, who loaned the money, won't be able to collect from Shimon until year five, even though the loan was extended year one. And any properties that Shimon might have, under normal circumstances, if he sold properties after he borrowed money, there is a lien on those properties in favor of the lender. Reuven would have a right to collect from any properties that Shimon sold after he took out a loan. In the case of a post-dated shtar, a shtar meuchar, since the date that appears in the shtar, in our example, was year 5, even though Shimon borrowed money 4 years before that, any lands that he sold between year one and year five, Reuven would have no claim against them. Because as far as we are concerned, Reuven's claim starts from year five, the date that's written into the shtar. That's a shtar meuchar. The Gemara that we will be picking up with starts at the bottom line of Tes Amud Beis. Hahu Shtara Davi Kosev Bei Shis Shonin Yeserta. There was a shtar that came in front of Beis Din that was written in the year that it came in front of Beis Din, and they noticed that the year that was on the shtar was 6 years later than it actually was. Sovu Rabbonon Kamei de Rebbe Lemeimar Hai Shtora Meucharhu Neakfei Ademati Zimnei Velo Torif. They thought to say that this is a shtar meuchar, and that the Malve will not have a right to collect from it until the date that actually appears in it, namely 6 years later. For example, there was a shtar that was, instead of having the year 500 written into it, they wrote into it 506. Omar Rav Nachman Hai Shtora Davkona Kasvei. Rav Nachman in observing this case, he says, this shtar is meduyok. Davkona means it's exact. V'hanoch shis shonin, the extra 6 years that appears in the date, is a reference to the molchu bo'elam. Elam was the name of a certain region that Greece, that Yavon, defeated 6 years before they gained world conquest. So the writer of this shtar put as a date in it, using as his dating system, the beginning of the Greek conquest that started in Elam, this region that they conquered before their world conquest. Hence, the clock started running earlier, so to speak, 6 years earlier than our clock starts running. Hence, even though we would be writing, in our example, year 500, their dating system, this shtar's dating system, was based on something that started 6 years earlier. So that even though we write 500, they are writing year 506. De'anan lo chashvinon lehu, hu kochoshiv lei uvezimne kasve. We don't consider the Greek conquest of Elam. Hence, our dating system doesn't start from that point. The fellow that wrote this shtar that came to Beis Din did reckon with that, did consider that as a starting point in time, and the shtar that is coming in front of us is in fact written, was written today, so to speak. Though we would have written 500, he wrote 506, but both of them are referring to the same time, and it's not a post-dated shtar. Disanyo, we have a Tanaic source, and you can see that there's a frame around it, setting it off from the rest of the Gemara, as we do in our marking system. We frame off all Tanaic sources. Rabbi Yosi Oimer, Sheish Shonim Molchu Be'elam, the Yavon ruled over Elam for 6 years. V'achar kach poshto malchusan b'chol ha'olam kulo, and then their empire spread over the entire world. Maskif lo Rav Acha bar Yankiv, mimai de la malchus Yavonim moninon. Who says that we bichlal, that we at all date our documents based on the Greek ascent to power? Dilmo Yitzias Mitzrayim Moninon. Maybe we date our documents according to the years since the exodus from Mitzrayim. Now, as far as the fact that the date in the shtar seems to be many fewer years since then, that doesn't show, however, that we don't count from Mitzrayim. V'shavke l'alfa kamo, the author, the scribe, dropped the first 1,000. V'nakte alfa basra, and rather he considers only from the more recent 1,000 years. V'hai mu'ucharhu, and this shtar is in fact a post-dated document. We must explain this using an example. We have a note on the inside margin. We've written there, Dilma lo moninon miyavon. Maybe it is so that we don't really count from the Yavon Empire, from the Greek Empire. De Bishnas HaChurban Koisvin 380. A document that would be written, let us say, for example, in the year of the Churban, would have been dated 380, because if you were counting from the Greek Empire, we know that they ascended to power 380 years before the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Ela moinin Yitzias Mitzrayim. But rather, maybe we count from Yitzias Mitzrayim. Ubishnas HaChurban hu 1380 Miyetzias Mitzrayim. And in fact, at the year of the Churban, it was 1380 years since Yetzias Mitzrayim. And if you'll ask, how do you get to that? So we've indicated that there were 480 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim till Bayis Rishon. The Bayis Rishon, the first Beis HaMikdash, stood 410 years. There was the Golos Bavel, 70 years. And the Bayis Sheni stood 420 years. That totals up to 1380 years. So that instead of dating from the Greek ascent to power, maybe we date our documents from Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that if we see if that be the case, and we see a document that has a date in it that's 6 years later than the than where we are standing right now, it in fact is a post-dated document, a shtar me'uchar. And since we're talking about a dating from Yetzias Mitzrayim, there's no way to account for that 6 year discrepancy like we did before when we were talking about a dating system since the Greek ascent to power, and we suggested that the document was dated based on their initial conquest 6 years earlier. But that we can't say right now. Omar Rav Nachman, Bagoyla ein moinen elo lamalche yevonim bilvad. Rav Nachman says that you can forget about that suggestion that we count from Mitzrayim, because in the diaspora, documents are dated from the Greek Empire. The Rashi says, "Ein moinin ela lamalchi yavonim v'kivan de lamalchus yavon moninon." And since it is so that we count from the Greek Empire, from their ascent to world conquest, v'ika lemitli lahanoch shis shonen b'safra davkona, and as far as the 6 year discrepancy is concerned, we can ascribe it to an exacting type scribe. Talinon bay, we will associate the extra 6 years with that case, as we mentioned earlier. V'lo talinon le b'mechilas hashibud, and we're not going to say that the 6 year discrepancy is a function of the lender foregoing his collection rights and delaying them for 6 years. Shein kol odem oisek kein. It's very unusual for people to be moichel to forgive on their collection rights or delay their collection rights. Hu sovar dechuye komat chile. He thought that Rav Nachman was just offering some type of push-off answer. However, Nofak Dok V'Ashgach, he then went out and investigated this issue and found Desanyo, a braiso that says, Ba'goyla ein moinen elo l'malchi yevonim bilvad. He found a Tanaic source supporting Rav Nachman. Omar Ravina Masnisen Nami Daika. Through careful reading of the Mishnayos, you can see this as well. Notice we have a long point marking. There's a nun that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line indicating the length of this point. And the nun stands for nekuda, a point. In other words, all of the lines of Gemara that are parallel or opposite this vertical dashed line are part of developing Ravina's point. So Ravino says that through careful reading of Mishnayos, you can find this idea borne out, namely that we date our documents according to the ascent to power of Gentile kings. Disnan. You have a source from Maseches Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah says, Be'echod benison Rosh Hashanah l'molochim l'regolim. The first of Nisan is considered the new year concerning kings and holidays. V'yamrinon limlochem l'may hilchasa, and we say that that which the Mishnah says that it's considered a new year with regard to kings, what practical bearing does that have? Omer av chista l'shtoros. It has practical bearing with regard to the dating of documents. Utnan, and there's another Tanaic source that we're labeling as Beis, in contrast to the source just a few, two lines up, which we labeled as Aleph. This source says, Be'echad b'tishrei Rosh Hashanah l'shonim u'lishmitim. The first of Tishrei is considered the new year with regard to years and Shemitah cycles. V'yamrinon l'shonim l'may hilchasa, and we ask, when you say that the first of Tishrei is the new year with regard to Shonim, with what practical halachic bearing does that have? The Omar Rav Chisda l'shtoros, that we date Shtoros from Echad b'Tishrei. But now, if you just compare markings that we have here, we've got Rav Chisda, and you can contrast, you can see him twice, and then we have him discussing the issue of Shtoros, which we put in a diamond. Now, how can you resolve this? We see Kashya Shtoros Ahadodi. We seem to have a contradiction with regard to how to date documents. The first comment of Chisda would have led you to believe that we date documents, that the year changes every time the first of Nisan rolls around. The second Rav Chisda comment would have led you to believe that the year changes when Echad B'Tishrei rolls around. U'mishaninon, and we answer, Kan l'malchi Yisrael, kan l'malchi oivdei chichovim. It depends. If you're dating from Malchi Yisrael, the year will change every time Aleph Nisan rolls around. And if you're dating according to Gentile kings, the date will change when Aleph Tishrei passes. The Gemara explains this. When it comes to Gentile kings, we count from Tishrei. L'malche Yisrael, minisan moninan. And when it comes to Jewish kings, we count their royal year changes every time the first of Nisan rolls around. The lettering that we've used in the Gemara between the lines is designed to compare or to connect to the original Aleph and Beis that we presented when showing, when learning the sources. And the Gemara goes on to say, "V'anan hashto mitishrei maninon." And nowadays we count our documents from Tishrei, which is the date that is shayach, that is associated with the Gentile kings. The Isal Kodaitoch Yesias Mitzrayim Moninon, and if you were to think that we date our documents according to the, based on the Exodus from Mitzrayim, then Minison Bo'inon Lemimni, then it would have been much more appropriate to count from Nisan. And yet we don't do that. We date our documents based on a Tishrei system, namely every time an Echad B'Tishrei rolls around, a new year sets in. Elolav Shmamino. Rather, you can conclude from this, from the fact that we date from Tishrei, that therefore Lamalche Yevonim Moninon Shmamino, that we are counting or dating our documents based on the Greek kings and not based on Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Gemara now cites that which we learned in the Mishnah, V'yoyim genusio shel malcheim. My V'yoyim genusio shel malcheim. We notice a geometric form, we have a little house form, with a Roman numeral number 1 to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text as well, in a house form. In the outside margin, we've included a heading here, Nosei Mivneh, a topic heading, and a structural note. You notice the house form appears. Shlovim, these are stages. Bebiur, to clarify or explain, Mahu Yoyim Genusya. So as you scan down the Gemara, you'll see we've numbered off several of these house forms, and the numbering continues in the little space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. These are all stages of suggested answers. Between 1 and 2, 2 and 3, the Gemara will have a back-and-forth questioning that takes place. So the Gemara asks, "My v'yom ha-genusya shel malcheihem?" What is meant by that? Omar Rav Yehuda, "Yom shemamidim bo yevdikichovim es malkom." It's the coronation day of kings. And that's considered one of the Gentile holidays. That's a day that the Mishnah makes reference to as being forbidden to have commercial dealings with the Goyim, because those are days that are associated with idolatrous service, worship. And as we've seen before, there is the fear that if I do conduct business with them, so they will go and acknowledge that to their deities. So at this point, the Gemara feels that Yom Genusya is the day that they is the celebration of Coronation Day. That every year that date rolls around, they have a holiday. The Gemara asks, how can you say that Yom Genusya is a reference to Coronation Day when you have a source that says as follows, V'atanya, Yom Genusya V'yom Shemamidim Bo Es Malkom. This Brisa presents them as two separate events. There's Yom Genusya is one thing, and Yom Shemamidim Bo Es Malkom is something different. The Gemara says, no, Lo Kashya Hodi Dei Hodi Brei. One is a reference to the father being set into office, and the other time is a reference to the son's ascent to office. Let's glance at the Rashi. Right under the Gemara text, Hodi Dei Hodi Brei, Kishimamidim Ben Melech Bechai Oviv Lahachzikoi Bumlucha. When you have a son being coronated during the lifetime of his father, so that the son is able to strengthen his position, being that his father is around, yet he will ensure that his son's position is strengthened. So, Someach Av, the Oiso Isu Yoim, Eid, the father, who is the, let's say, the basic ruler, the original king, when he is able to set his son off into as monarch, the father is happy and establishes that as a holiday. The Gemara asks, Umi mukmi malko bar malko. Do the Romans ever establish a son in place of his father as a king? Do they allow for this? Baha Toni Rav Yosef, Hine koto nesatich magoyim. This is a posuk describing the goyim, and it says, She'ein moishivin melech ben melech. The posuk says, Bozui ato me'oid, She'ein lohem loy ksav v'loy loshon. That the Romans don't have their own script nor their own language. So what do we see from here? We see that the proposition that Yom Genusya is one thing and Yom Shemamino Es Malkom is something else, one referring to the father's installation in office and the other the son of that man, but they don't have sons set into office to replace their fathers. Elo, ma yoim genusya, yoim haleda, a birthday. V'hotanya, we have a source that says yoim genusya v'yoim haleda, two as being two separate distinct times, and therefore we can't say that yoim genusya is yom haleda. Lo kashya hodi dei hodi brei. One is a reference to the father's birthday, and the other is a reference to the son's birthday. Gemara asks, "V'atanya yom genusya shaloi, yom genusya shel benoi, V'yoyim haleido sheloi, V'yoyim haleido shelbeno. This source has a list of four different kinds of holidays, and you can see that Yom Genusya is something separate and distinct from birthdays, because Yom Haleido Shelo and Yom Haleido Shelbeno are already accounted for as separate events, separate from Yom Genusya. Ela, we're now at stage 3. Ma Yom Genusya, Yom Shemamidim Boi Malkam. It's their coronation day. And that day is celebrated year after year as a Yom Eid, as an idolatrous holiday. Veloi, you're saying here in this third stage that Yom Genusya is Yom Shemamidim Boi Malkam. Velo Kasha, and don't ask that which we saw before, that we had a source citing Yom Genusya as distinct from Yom Shemamidim Boi Malkam, because Hadidei Hadibrei, one is a reference to the father's installation in power, and the other is the case of the son being installed into power by his father. The Ikashiloch, and if you ask on that explanation, the Lo Mukmi Malka Bar Malka, we saw before, and you can see that was cited where the star appears, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and you see above a parallel star. Well, we said that they don't establish sons in place of their father. That's not absolutely true. Al yaday she'ela mukmi. If there's a special request for it, there is a circumstance whereby a son can be installed to replace his father. At this point, we have a long point marking, a long nekuda. You can see this to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, a circled nun and a dashed vertical line, indicating that all of these lines are going to develop this particular point of a case, an example of a son being installed into office while his father is still in power. We also have another geometric form that we want to draw your attention to. A triangle will be appearing, and we have this as a comment in the margin. The Nosei Mivneh, you notice the triangle is featured. Sidra, a series, Shel Maisim Uremozim Vein Rebbe Vantuninus. A series of incidents and hintings that take place between Rebbe and the Roman Emperor Antoninus. So the Gemara goes on, and we're focusing right now on the issue of son being installed into office while father is in power. Kgon Asuyarus Bar Antoninus de Molach. There's an example of a son, Asuyarus, who ruled while his father, Antoninus, Anthony, was around. Amarle Antoninus the Rebbe, and here's the background to that. Antoninus, who we see in this Gemara and will be brought out a few times, was this Roman emperor was very friendly to Rebbe Yehuda Hanossi. So Antoninus, and he sought counsel with Rebbe, and as we will see now, Amar le Antoninus le Rebbe, Bo'ino de Yimloich Asuyarus Bri Tchusi. That's point number one. I want my son to replace me in office. And number two, V'tisavid Tveria Kalanya. And I want the city of Tveria to experience a tax relaxation or a tax exemption. The Rashi says, Kalanya Baschorin, Shaloti Te Maslo Ilam, should be freed from paying taxes forever, Mishum de Isbo Rabbonon, because there are sages there. Antoninus Asmohe Meshamesh Bifne Rebbe Rakamon, Mishum Hochi Oyev the Rabbonon. Antoninus himself used to serve Rebbe, as the Gemara will speak about later on, and because of this he had an affinity toward the Rabbonon. So Antoninus tells Rebbe that I have two requests. as we mentioned, one, to have my son installed into office, and two, to have Tveria free, the city of Tveria free from paying taxes. The e-amolahu, and if I put in my request to the governing body, the Roman Senate, chado avdi treilo avdi, they will allow one request, but not two. So, what do? I see Gavra. Rebbe acted something out here. He brought a man, Arkave Achavre, he placed one man on the shoulders of another man, V'yohev le yoyna le'eloi biyodei, and he gave the upper man a bird, put a bird in his hands, a yona type of bird, that Omar le letata, and Rebbe mentioned to the lower man, and said the following, Amar le'ila de le'mifrach min yodei yoyna, you should tell the upper guy to let the bird go free. Omar, Antoninus, upon seeing this, he understood the hint. Shma mino hochi ko'omar li. Thusly, he is saying to me, At boi minayu dasyars bri yimloch tchusi. You should request, namely, Antoninus should request that his son be installed into power. The emo le la suyarus, and then you, Antoninus, should tell your son, de tavid Tveria kalanya, that he should see to it that Tveria receives its tax exemption. And with that, Antoninus will successfully gain his two requests without formally lodging both requests, but rather putting in just one request as far as he was concerned. Omar le, Antoninus says to Rebbe, he addresses Rebbe and says, Mitzarin li chashuvi romoi, the Roman officials are giving me trouble. Mayel le legina, Rebbe took Antoninus into his garden. Kol yoyma okar le pugla mimashra kamei, every day he ripped out a pugla, a type of vegetation. He ripped out one of these from the row in front of him. Every day he ripped out one. Omar shma mino hochi ka'omar li. Antoninus understood this, and he said, thusly he is trying to indicate to me, at ketol chad chad minayu, knock off one by one, velo tisgara behu bekulhu, and don't try to confront or enrage all of them at once. In other words, even though there's a number of officials that are troubling you, you knock them off one by one so as not to create a public uproar, and in the course of time you'll in effect eliminate all those that are bothering you. The Gemara asks, V'leimo le meimar behedya, why doesn't Rebbe just say it straight out? Why is he working with these hints? Omar shami chashuvi romi umitzaru le. The answer is that if he says it outright, it will be heard, and the Roman officials will cause Rebbe trouble. Vele mole balachash, why doesn't he just whisper it to him? Why the need to act it out? Answer, Mishum dechsiv ki oif hashamayim yoylich es hakol. As the pasuk says, that once something is in a vocal fashion, the bird that flies will carry with him the voice. There's an expression that is somewhat popular, a little birdie told me. So that expression may have its roots in this particular pasuk, that once something is said, even in a quiet form, somehow others pick up on it. Another incident with Antoninus and Rebbe. Havele hahu barto dishmo gira. Antoninus had a daughter whose name was Gira, ka'ovda isura, and she was behaving immorally. Shodar Le Gargira. Rebbe sent to Antoninus a plant whose name is Gargira. Upon receiving it, Antoninus asked him, well, what in the world is Rebbe sending this to me for? So there must be a message in it. We must go over the Gemara again with to correct a mistake, that Shodar Le is Antoninus sent to Rebbe this plant, Gargira. So upon receiving it, Rebbe said, what is he sending me this plant for? And so he realized that it's to be associated with the daughter of Antoninus, and that she is being drawn to the immorality. Shodar Le, so after receiving the Garagira and Rebbe understanding what the hint was, Rebbe sends back to Antoninus Kusbarta. Kusbarta is the name of another plant. According to Rashi, though we must note that Tosfos disagrees with this, but the Rashi Pshat, the Rashi explanation is, the word Kusbarta can be broken into two words. Kusbarta. The name of the plant is Kusbarta, but the name itself is made up of two words. Kos means slaughter. Barta means daughter. In other words, if your daughter is bringing upon you ill repute, so eliminate her, kill her. Tosfos has difficulty with that pshat and comes up with a different explanation. But for our purposes, we are going to continue. Shodar Le Karsi. Antoninus sends back to Rebbe another plant, a Karsi plant. And with that, he's trying to hint that, well, if I kill my daughter, I'm cutting off my seed. I'm cutting off my future. Sholach Le Chasa. So Rebbe sent back another plant, the Chasa vegetable, and he said, well, then you have to have compassion for her. Chasa also means Rachmonis. Kol Yoima have Shodar Le Davo Pricha be Matrosa v'chiti apumayo. Every day, Antoninus would send to Rebbe gold filings, that's davo pricha, gold filings, the matrosa are in sacks, and in the sacks that were filled with gold, he scattered some wheat grain on the top of these sacks. On the top meaning before tying shut the sacks, there was an upper layer of wheat that he put on it. Omar Lahu, Antu Chiti, the Rebbe told his emissaries, bring the wheat to Rebbe. So one can easily see that he was trying to do this surreptitiously, and that in the event someone would open up the sack, it wouldn't draw any suspicion, and they would say, oh, he's simply sending wheat. Omar Le Rebbe, Rebbe says to Antoninus, Lo Tsarichna Isli Tuva, I don't need it. I have a lot. I'm wealthy. I don't need your valuables, your money, your gold. Omar Antoninus said, Lehevu Leman de Basrach, let the gold be set aside for those that follow you, for the future generations. Diyahavi Lebasroi. They will, in fact, your descendants will give my descendants the gold. In other words, it's going to come back to me, to my descendants, anyway. The osu basroch ude osi minayhu nepuk alayhu. Because your descendants and those that come forth from them, the future generations, are going to be basically subject, and Antoninus must have been able to foresee this, are going to be subject to Roman oppression, and Nepuk Alayu, they'll have to use the gold to bribe their way or pay their way out of difficult situations. So that it's true that it appears that I'm sending you the gold, but in effect the gold is really going to come back to me, in the general sense, my descendants. Have le hahi nakrasa. There was a cave. Dava Ailo Mibese, the base Rebbe, that led from the palace of the emperor of Antoninus to the home of Rebbe, some type of subterranean connection. Kol Yoimo Have Maisi Tre Avdi, every day, when Antoninus wanted to visit with Rebbe, he, as emperor, would be escorted by two slaves, two guards, two Avdi. Antoninus didn't want his visitations to Rebbe to become known. So, how did he deal with these guards? So, as he left his palace, going through that under a subterranean chamber, he would post one guard at the exit of his house, at the exit point, and he would post another guard at the entrance to Rebbe's house. Chad katle abovo debe Rebbe. So that when he was about to enter Rebbe's house, he was in effect with one guard. The other one had been left back at Antoninus's house exit point. So that when he got to Rebbe's house, he was with one guard. Well, he killed that guard at the entrance to Rebbe's house. And then when he was coming back to his palace, the chad katle abovo de base, and that guard he killed at the entrance to his own house. That way, no one ever discovered Antoninus's visitations to Rebbe. Omale, Antoninus said to Rebbe, Be'idno da asino, at the time that I come to you, Lo nashkach gavar kamoch. I don't want any gever meaning I don't want any human beings by you. In other words, I want to be alone with you. Yom echad, ashkechei the Rabbi Chanina bar Chamo dehavi Yosef. One day, Antoninus arrives at Rebbe's house, and lo and behold, he sees someone else there. He sees Rabbi Chanina bar Chamo, who was sitting by Rebbe. Omar, Antoninus said, Lo amino loch, didn't I tell you, be'idno de asino, that when I come, lo nashkach gever kamoch, there should be no man found by you. Omar le, Rebbe says, pointing to Rabbi Chanina bar Chamo, les dein bar inish, this is no human being. Omar le, so Antoninus turns to Rabbi Chanina and says to him, Lemo le lahu avda degoni abova dekoyim velesi. Go and tell the servant that's right outside the door that's sleeping, supposedly. You can see that in our markings we put degoni in quotation marks, indicating that it really wasn't the case. He was already dead. But Antoninus says to Rabbi Chanina, go tell the guy sleeping out there, abova, at the doorway, the koyim velesi, that he should get up and come in. Ozal Rabbi Chanina bar Chamo ashkechei davekotil. Rabbi Chanina goes out the door and sees that he's been murdered. We saw before that was Antoninus' practice to murder those guards that he posted at the entrance to Rebbe's house. Omar hechi avit. So Rabbi Chanina saw the dead man and he said, what am I going to do? E ezel the emole de kotil, if I go in and tell Antoninus the man has been murdered, well, ein meshivin ala kalkola, there's a tradition that one should not be the bearer of ill tidings, that he shouldn't come in, it's not right for me to go and tell him the bad news. Ashbeke the ezel, for me to just leave him there and go, ka mezalzalinon b'machusa, that would be a defamation, a disparagement of the monarchy. Bo rachmi ole v'achye v'shadre. Here you see something dramatic as can be. Rabbi Chanina bar Chamo davened, he prayed, sought mercy, and that brought this dead man back to life. And he sent him in. Omar Antoninus, upon seeing this miraculous event, said, Yadana Zuti de Izbechu Mechayamesim, I know that the least amongst you, in other words, the youngest or the smallest of your sages, is capable of resurrecting the dead. Mihu, but idno da asino lo nashkach inish kamoch. However, I still maintain my original request that when I come, I don't want to have anybody with you. I want to be with you alone. Kol yoima have mishamish the Rebbe. Every day, Antoninus used to serve Rebbe. Something that's just amazing. One should appreciate the grandeur of our leaders through the generations. Here you have Rebbe, the end of the Tanaic period, and the Roman emperor is serving him. He would serve Rebbe, machile, he would feed him, mashkile, give him to drink. Kavibboi Rebbe lemesak lepuria, when Rebbe wanted to ascend to his bed, let's just assume that the bed had some type of height to it, that generally speaking, a person would use some type of stool to get up onto the bed. So when Rebbe wanted to get up onto his bed, Havi gochen kami purya, Antoninus bent over in front of the bed. Omar le, Antoninus said to Rebbe, sak iluvoi lepurya, step on me to get into your bed. Omar, Rebbe said, this is going too far. He says, Lav orach aro lezilzuli b'malchusa kule hai. It's not the proper way. It's not orach aro. It's not derech eretz. It's not the proper way to disparage the monarchy so much. It sounds from this Gemara that, all right, it's enough, so to speak, that there's this partial level of zilzil through his feeding me and his giving me to drink, but for me to step on him, that's going too far. Omar Antoninus was taken aback, and he said, "Mi yisimeni matzo tachtecha le'olam haba." Omar le, asino l'alma d'asi. Antoninus said, "Halavai, it should only be that I could be a mat underneath you in the world to come." And Antoninus asks of Rebbe, "Am I going to come to the future world? Will I have a portion in that world, in the world of ultimate good?" Amalei in Rebbe says to Antoninus, "Yes, you will have a chelik in Olam Haba." Amalei v'hoksiv, but Antoninus says, "But doesn't it say in the psukim lo yes sorid lebeis Esav, that from the household of Esav no one will be left?" And as we've said on a previous occasion, the Romans are associated with the descendants of Esav, and the pasuk says there will be nothing left in the future of Beis Esav. So how can you tell me that I will have a portion in the world to come when they are said to be eliminated? So the Gemara says that pasuk that says Lo Yesar the Beis Esav, there'll be no remnant of Beis Esav. That's Ba'osem Beis Esav. That's when they continue in the ways of Esav. However, someone like you, who is clearly a righteous individual, has such high regard for the Torah and for Talmidei Chachamim, that's not Beis Esav. That's very worthy of a portion in the world to come. Tanya Nami Hochi, and we have a Tanaic source that supports that which we've just said. The pasuk is featured here. Lo yesor lebeis Esav, yochol lakoil. Are we to understand this as all inclusive, that there be nothing left of the beis Esav? Talmud Lomar lebeis Esav equals ba'osim ma'ase Esav. What is meant by the posit that there'll be no remnant of Esav, that's if the descendants continue the ways, the evil ways of Esav. Amalei, so Antoninus asks, though, Valksiv Shama Edom Achel V'chol Nesiyaha, there in purgatory is Edom, its kings and all of its princes. Amalei, so Rebbe answers back, if you read the posit carefully, you'll see that it's not all inclusive. Malcheha velo kol malcheha. The pasuk refers to the kings. It doesn't say all the kings. In fact, when the pasuk wants to talk about everybody, it does use the word kol, as you can see in the continuation of the pasuk where the expression kol nesi'a applies. So the fact that malcheo isn't prefaced by the word kol, it shows that it's not all inclusive. As he says just now, malcheo velo kol malcheo, the kings, but not all of the kings. In other words, there will be some that will remain, that won't be part of the lot of Esav. Kol nesi'a velo kol soreha. The Nasi type officer, sometimes translated as the princes, or nevertheless it's a form of leadership. Those kinds of leaders, the Nasi'im of Esav, are totally will have no remnants. However, v'lo kol sareha. However, the sar is another type of officer. That will not be totally eliminated. So when you look at the pasuk, we see the different inferences that are drawn. Malcheo, we said, is malcheo, but not all malcheo. And kol nesia is also exclusionary of the lo kol soreha. Tanya nami hachi. Malcheo velo kol malcheo. This Tanaic source supports that which we just saw in the Gemara, that the kings will not be left to base itself. However, velo kol malcheo, not all of the kings. Kol nesieha, velo kol soreha. The Gemara goes over these points, and we've underlined them to emphasize it. Malcheo velo kol malcheo, when the inference was the kings will not remain, but not all inclusive. Prat mantuninus ben asuyaris. This, as an exception, we see Antoninus, the son of Asuyarus, who will have a chelik in Olam Haba. Kol nesieha velo kol soreha, who is excluded when it says not all of the sorim, prat the k'tia bar shalom, with the exception of k'tia bar shalom, that will be explained now who he was. K'tia bar shalom mahi. Who is he, and what is the event that surrounds him? Tahu kesra davisoni liudoi. There was once upon a time a Roman emperor that hated the Jews. Amar lahu lachshiva demachusa. This emperor who hated the Jews turned to his ministers and to the important people of his kingdom and said, "Mi sha'olo loy nimo baraglo," someone who has on his leg dead meat, dead flesh, and this dead flesh is causing him pain. Yikte'eno v'yichye, should he cut off his leg and be able to live that way? Oy yanicheno v'yitzto'er, or leave it and experience constant suffering. Omru lo yikte'ena v'yichye. The best advice would be cut it off and then enjoy life and then be able to live. Omar lehu k'tia bar shalom. K'tia bar shalom was present and he said to them, understanding the analogy being that it's worth cutting out the Jewish people whom you hate, and thereby enabling to have for you to have the good life. So K'tia bar shalom, upon hearing this counsel, says a couple points, and you can see with our markings we've double underlined this the two points that he brings out. Chada de lo yachlis lehu lekulhu. First of all, you'll never be successful in eliminating all of the Jews. We have a bracketed section for initial skipping purposes to make the reading a little bit easier. V'oid koru loch malchuso k'tia. And secondly, if you try to eliminate the Jews, they'll call you the cut-off kingdom, a kingdom that has like a blank spot in it, whereby if you practice genocide of a particular people, you'll then be referred to as the genocidal kingdom, so to speak. Let's go over the bracketed section. The Ketiyah Bar Sholem's first point was that you will not be successful in getting rid of all of the Jews. How is he so sure of that? D'chtiv, the Pasuk says, Ki ka'arba ruchos ha-shamayim parasti eschem. My ko'omar, what is the meaning of this Pasuk? I le'ma de'bat shesahoyin le'dalid ruchos, that it's a reference to the Jews being scattered. Bat shesahoyin, bodar is to, like the word pozar, is to scatter. If you were to think that it means that they are, the Jews are scattered to the four corners of the world, hi ke'arba ruchos le'arba ruchos miboyalei, it would have been more accurate to say le'arba with a lamed to the four corners. Why is the chof put in this word ke'arba? The chof is a letter indicating a comparison to something. Ela k'shem she'ev shel oylem below ruchos. The meaning of the pasuk is that just like the world cannot subsist without winds, winds are an integral part of world sustenance. So just like the world cannot be maintained without winds, kachi efshla oilam below Yisrael, so too the world cannot continue to exist without the presence of Jews in it. V'oid, a second point that Ketiyah Bar Sholem raises, if you do try to kill all of the Jews, koru lach malchus soktia, you will be referred to as the cut-off kingdom. Amale, so the emperor says to Ketiyah, meima shapiku amris, you're saying very well, in other words, you are rebuffing what I want to do, and your points are very strong. Miu called the Zochi Lamalcha. However, there's a rule that anyone who defeats the king, Shadu Le Lekamunya Chalila, he is cast away, he's put into a, according to Rashi, a room full of dirt. According to the Rabbeinu Hananel, he's put into a furnace. Well, Kadhave Naktin Le the Aslin, as they were taking him away, the, after all, he did defeat, he rebuffed the king, so Ketiyah Bar Sholem was being taken away. Amra Leh Hahi Matronisa. So a certain Matronisa, matron woman, an important Roman woman, called out, Vai Leh Le'ilfa de Ozla below Michsa. Woe unto the boat that goes without paying the tax. Rashi explains what the hint is over here. And he says that since you, Ketiyah, are going off to die on behalf of the Jews, in other words, you were defending the Jewish people, and as a result of that, you're going to die for them, so to speak, wouldn't it be only right or proper or wonderful that you should have a chelek, you should have a portion in the world to come together with the Jews? But you are not circumcised, and how, and you'll therefore not be able to get that portion. And she says that with this analogy that woe unto the boat that's going, he is going on a trip to the future world, and going without paying the tax, you're going without having been circumcised, without a bris milah. Nofal al resha de urlase kota. He, as he was being taken away, literally fell upon his foreskin. It means he circumcised himself. Omar, he then announced or declared, Yavis michsi chalfis v'avris, I've paid the tax, now I can go through. Ki koshadule, when they threw him in, Omar, he, Ketiyah Bar Sholem, announced, Kol nichsoy the Rabbi Kiva v'chaverov, I'm dedicating all of my possessions, all of my property, to Rabbi Kiva and his colleagues. Yotza Rabbi Kiva v'dorash. Rabbi Kiva, then upon hearing this, he issued the following piece of analysis. The Pasuk says, with regard to the division of the Lechem Haponim, the weekly distribution of the breads that were put in the Beis HaMikdash, the Pasuk says that they will be for Aaron and his sons. And since Aaron is mentioned by name and no one else, the conclusion is Mechzol Aaron or Mechzol Abonov. 50% goes to Aaron. He gets half of the Lechem upon him. And the rest go to his sons. So too, Rabbi Kiva understood that since I was specified in his will, he said, Kol Nechsoi Rabbi Kiva v'chaverov, so since I was the only one mentioned by name, I too get 50% of his estate. Yotza Baskol v'yomra, a heavenly voice came forth and announced, K'tia bar shalom mezumen l'chayi olam haba, that this righteous Gentile is summoned to the world to come, to the world of all good. Bocha Rebbe, the Omar Rebbe, cried upon hearing this and said, Yesh koine oilomo b'sho achas, v'yesh koine oilomo b'kama shanim. There are those that acquire their portion in the world to come through the act of a moment, and there are those that have to toil all of their lives. Antoninus Shamshe l'Rebbe, Adruchon Shamshe l'Rav. Two famous individuals that are featured here. You have the Roman Emperor Antoninus used to serve Rebbe, and we saw that above. And Adruchon used to serve Rav. Kishochiv Antoninus, Omar Rebbe, upon the death of Antoninus, Rebbe cried out and said, Nispardo Chavila. The literally means the package became undone. The Rashi at the top of Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, says, Ahavosenu, our love for one another has now been severed. Shenikshura Nefesh B'Nefesh, they had been tied together, we call soulmates. And now with his death, I am no longer with him. The Gemara continues, Kishochiv Adruchon, Omar Rav, when Adruchon died, Rav said, Nispardo Chavila. He said the same thing. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.